Welcome back to Perfect Takes. I'm your host, Stephen Patton, joined as always by my co-host and dear friend, Jake McQuire. And it's time. It's finally here. We are, what, a week away from the NFL season getting kicked off in Philadelphia. And we get the breakdown the NFC South. We get the breakdown all the teams that the Panthers will be playing in the division. Since this is a Panthers podcast, we will talk about them at the end. And we'll talk about their division rivals from last to first in terms of how they finished last year. Jacob, any thoughts, mood for the day? I know last night we had our big fantasy draft, and that was a lot of fun. But anything for this Thursday?
Oh, I have thoughts, and we'll go over them in depth. I guess we can say about the fantasy draft. Obviously, I won, and I'm expecting great things out of my roster. I know a lot of people think they won, but they just don't know yet that I have the best roster. So we'll see around week, what, like 12 is when we really start to know who's going to be the 1 and 2 seeds for the playoffs. We'll see then. But as far as the NFC South goes, I for sure have thoughts about this division, starting with the New Orleans Saints, who were in last but had a tied record with the Panthers and actually drafted after us due to all the like strength of victory and strength of schedule tiebreakers, which I think is really funny. It's hard to be lower in the division but draft after, so I like that. But I want to start with the Saints and a move that they made, what, it would be last Thursday, so a week from today, when they traded a 4th and a future 7th. We don't even need to include the 7th. I just say that because that's the value of which Denver took this player. They traded a 4th and a 7th for Devon Vele, who will be 28 years old in his year 2 season. I don't know what the Saints are up to. This is not a roster that screams winning a lot of games. It's not a roster that screams winning games at all this year. And to trade a what's going to be a top 120 pick, I think we can agree, for a receiver who didn't even move the needle in Denver, I think is just asinine. And that to kick off the Saints year going into the season, I'm just very confused as to what they're doing.
It's the same as the Justin Reed signing. It's like safeties, some of these auxiliary players where you're sending picks for. It's stuff you do when you're on the cusp of building like a playoff team, and you need that extra piece to kind of put you over the top. And that's the team building approach we're seeing the Saints take, with pretty much like filling out like barren cubby holes in this roster. And it is quite barren. I think the only thing, and you and I were kind of in a disagreement pre-recording, but the Saints offensive line, I think, is the only thing you can be happy about in terms of how you've built over the past half decade or so. You have veterans in Eric McCoy and Cesar Ruiz kind of holding up the interior. You're going to try Trevor Penning out now at left guard. Maybe that works out for you. Maybe it doesn't. But I'm really happy about Fuaga, who their right tackle and first round pick last year has kind of developed and molded into, I think, a starting caliber player in the NFL. And then Kelvin Banks out of Texas. And so if those guys play well and they start the gel in Kellen Moore's system, I think there's a lot to, I think, start to get excited about on offense, because if Chris Olave and Rashid Shaheed can stay healthy, we saw how productive they were last year. And then all the questions then kind of come back to the quarterback situation. And I think they are well aware that they are putting themselves in a position for the Archie Manning sweepstakes. Obviously, when you trade a pick for Vele, when you sign Justin Reed, when you use a second round pick on Tyler Shuck, it doesn't seem to all come together in that way. And I think that's why on the outside looking in, this is very perplexing.
And let's start with the Arch Manning thing, right? Because I'm not, again, convinced he's going to be in this draft. I know his grandfather, his grandfather's Archie. He's Arch. I know like it's a tough, it's kind of confusing. I get him confused myself. Arch kind of walked back those comments, but all of the Mannings and when they were drafted had no less than 2 years as a starter. And I know that was 20 years ago when Eli was over 20 years ago now, right? It'd be 23, 24 years when Eli was drafted, probably closer to 30 when Peyton was drafted, but all of them had at least 2 years as a starter. Arch he planned his move to Texas, right? You got to remember he committed to Texas after Quinn Ewers transferred there from Ohio State. And Quinn Ewers in his own right was also a perfect recruit ranking, like his rating was 1.0, just like Arch. So this was their plan to go to Texas. He'll probably make more money at Texas anyway. next season than he will as the number one overall pick. But even if he were going to be in the draft, why would you spend your 40th pick on a QB that can't even beat out Spencer Rattler to be the starter? And it's not as though Rattler has good tape to back him up or a vote of confidence from an incumbent coach, because they have a new head coach, a new offensive coordinator, who, by the way, is the dad of the LSU starting quarterback. So we can keep that in mind for draft season. But all of the stuff that the Saints are doing, it just seems that they're operating on multiple timelines, and all of the timelines that they're operating on seem to be timelines in which they think they are competing for a wild card spot or for the division title. And I know we aren't talking about the Panthers yet, who are in third, but to be quite frank, they weren't even close to Atlanta or Tampa Bay. And I think Tampa Bay is like a couple tiers ahead of them in terms of talent. I just don't see what the plan here is for the Saints. I guess they're going to chip away a little bit at the cap hell that they continue to find themselves in. But if that were the case, why do you sign Justin Reed to a substantial deal, right? They signed Julian Blackman. I understand that one more because Tyrann Mathieu just retired. So you need another starter there. Why do you extend? Well, I guess they extended Chase Young to actually help with their cap, but they bring Cam Jordan back for another year, who's just not a good NFL player anymore. It's just really confusing to me. I think we can expect this team to not be a playoff competitive team. What are you looking for in terms of buying or selling? I know we already had our fantasy draft, so it may not be in that regard, but what are like the X factors on this team in order for them to have a winning season? Because the way they're moving, wins are a successful season to them, even though we on the outside may not agree with that.
I'm very cautious, and I know this is like where you're like going, what are the positives you're looking for? But like to start off with the negatives, like I'm very, very cautious about Brandon Staley and this defense. But if you're looking for wins and how you can come away from a season where you're probably not going to end up in the playoffs, but you still want to feel good about the season, you need to have an offensive infrastructure where you're seeing the quarterback going through his reads, like he's doing things in practice that you're then seeing on the field. And it's just simply he's not able to make the throw. That the guy's open, he's making the read, he just doesn't have the arm talent to get the ball where it needs to be, or he can't manage the pocket well. Just things that you can easily put on quarterback play and not the rest of the offense, where if that is also happening where the quarterback's struggling and then wide receivers aren't coming open, the offensive line isn't blocking, it's like, then what are we doing here? Because a lot of these investments that have been made this offseason then are not paying off. And Kellen Moore would have been part of those decisions. This isn't like Mickey Loomis is doing everything by himself and then handing this roster to Kellen Moore. This is a joint effort. And so this is also going to fall back on Kellen Moore. And that's what has me a little bit worried. But if you want a point of optimism as Saints fans, it's going to be that, hey, we have a solid infrastructure for offense and all we need is a quarterback. And like you said, the offensive coordinator that they have is the father of LSU's quarterback right now. And he could be draft eligible this coming year. So all of these things are lining up where they do want a quarterback. It's just how they've gone about it doesn't make sense. And that's what I think we just keep hammering on at this point.
I think they have better than like the worst scenario for a rookie. I don't think it's a great one to say the least, because Kamara is going to be into his 30s. There's always concerns about Chris Olave and Rashid Shaheed staying on the field for a full season. But I like that they're starting to build that offensive line with some youth, right? McCoy and Ruiz have been there for one of them 6 years. I think one of them close to 10 years now. Trevor Penning, just not a good player at tackle. We'll see what happens at guard. But they're starting to turn over the roster a bit. It reminds me of the Jets with them doing the young tackle duo with Olu Fashanu and Armand Membu in the last two drafts. The difference with the Jets is they have an elite defense, an elite defensive talent. And I'd put Garrett Wilson in the same air as Chris Olave. He's just been on the field a good bit longer. And with the Jets, they'll have an established run game this year. I think we both expect the Saints to not only finish at the bottom of the division, but finish closer to the bottom of the league this year. They had the 9th overall pick in 2025. I think we both think it's going to be closer to the top 5. It's kind of how I'm feeling.
we talked about them in the same air and breath as like the Cleveland Browns. And obviously we've had a couple teams each year where it's like, we feel like they're the bottom dwellers. And I know we said like the Rams and Bucks a couple years ago when they ended up making like wild card pushes with Baker Mayfield and Matthew Stafford came back healthy. I just don't see it with these roster or this roster in particular because of the quarterback situation. Like Spencer Rattler and Tyler Shuck are not proven commodities. At that point in time, Baker Mayfield and Matthew Stafford had played in the NFL multiple seasons. They had
both number one overall picks too.
Exactly. Like and that's what I'm real saying. The pedigree talent, there. The resume, like, and all of that goes to show it's like, I don't see that in New Orleans, and it's not like they have any defensive talent. It's just like this is quite literally one of those situations where you know this is a rebuild, and it's just you take your wins when you can get them. You play hard each week, and that's where it goes back to, does this fundamentally line up? Does this look sound when you turn on the film on Monday? And if it does look sound and it's a matter of just like, hey, we need to get the right players in the building, people will start buying into it. But if that's not the case, then a lot of people are going to be very upset with Kellen Moore and Brandon Staley come the year's end. Now, another head coaching and general manager situation that I think both are actually on the hot seat this year are the Atlanta Falcons. I think Raheem Morris and Terry Fontenot, specifically, it's like he has been the guy that has kind of orchestrated this Atlanta Falcons build over that past half decade. You've invested a lot of top 10 talent in the offense, and they need to produce. And then on defense, it's like you just like sent a future first to get an edge rusher this year to pair with another underwhelming edge rusher. And we'll get into who those players are. We've already talked about them in some of our draft recap episodes. But those two players you're banking on generating pressure for you right out of the gate. And then you look at the back end, you're counting on two rookie safeties starting for you.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
So those kind of things just have me a little bit concerned.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you now. Is there you?
Everything- yeah, my camera turned itself on somehow, so I was dealing with that for a second. But I agree with a lot of the stuff you're saying. The Falcons last year, 8-9, right? There was a way that they could have made the playoffs at the end had they beaten us, the Panthers, and the Saints had beaten the Buccaneers. Obviously, both fronts don't work out, so they end up 8-9, miss the playoffs, what have you. But there, I think there was hope with a lot of Falcons fans going into this year because Michael Penix, the rookie, showed flashes. But that's really all it was, were flashes in the pan. I think, as with most rookies, not everyone is Jaden Daniels, most rookie QBs, I should say, bad first years with flashes. That's what we saw from Drake May. He was not a good player the whole year. Caleb Williams was not a good player the whole year. Even Bo Nix, who I think was competent, didn't shine in the way that Jaden Daniels did, right? So you have Michael Penix, who the three games he started, I think, were inconsistent, but he showed highs, particularly in high leverage scenarios. But I think in order for them to advance as a team, he has to grow in a way that I'm not sure he has in the barrel or in the chamber, I should say. The way that he throws, I think, doesn't lend itself to being an efficient thrower because he like loads up every throw and throws with one tempo. Granted, he has the strength to do it, but I think he does that a bit too often. And then when I look at this team, do you know how many external free agents they brought in that are going to start?
What is it, like one?
One. Leonard Floyd is projected to start now. And if he weren't going to start, it would be one of the rookies that they drafted. So they didn't really add anyone outside of Leonard Floyd. They added, what's the linebacker's name? Divine Diablo. And I'm getting to that point. They lost Grady Jarrett, who's one of their, like, the heart and soul of the Falcons. Mm-hmm. They lose Drew Dahlman, who was a big part of that offensive line. They lose Caleb McGarry to injury a couple of days ago, who's their right tackle. And people may think the right tackle is not as important as the left tackle. Do you know what hand Michael Penix throws with? He's left-handed. So the right side is his blind side. their run game, I don't want to say was completely based on running off the right, but Bijan Robinson and Tyler Allgeier were much more successful with runs off of the right tackle. So to lose that player already, to not have any new starters on the offensive side of the ball, and to have the infrastructure that you injected on defense be mainly rookies, I think that the road to success for this team is much more narrow, or road to growth and success, I should say, is much more narrow than people feel like it is. Because if you look at how the offense shook out last year, this was a top 12 offense in EPA per play. They were fifth in success rate. But a lot of that, what was carrying a lot of that weight was at the beginning of the year when Kirk Cousins was healthy. The offense was cooking at the beginning of the year when Cousins was healthy. You got to remember, they were beating the Bucks both times. They were winning games early. Then Kirk gets hurt, his arm, he can't make throws anymore. So they have to go to Penix. And again, Penix showed flashes, but it didn't amount to wins or sustained drives. And so when you're transitioning to a year two with, we can say, a worse O-line, like already out of the gate because they lose their center, Pro Bowl center, Drew Dahlman, lose your right tackle who they just extended. And then on defense, you're relying on a ton of rookies. I'm not sure that this team is going to take the step that a lot of people think they are. And in fact, I think that this is probably the team that's most primed for a major regression this season.
So everybody wants to hype up what they saw from Penix at the end of last year. I think they play, he played what, like the three games at the end. It was like the Giants, the Commanders, the Panthers. And all of those teams had below average defenses.
Horrific pass defenses on all three of them.
And so it's just like, you can air it out. You can throw some of these cover two hole shots because they don't have the athletes or the players to make some of those plays to stop it. And like you said about Michael Penix, he throws at one velocity. There's no touch on any of his passes. And because of that, he doesn't accurately throw the ball on some of these like intermediate or shorter routes. That like that zip is great on some of those passes you got to get downfield, but on some of those shorter routes, you're seeing that cause some accuracy concerns. And his average depth of target is a very high number. So he is pushing the ball downfield. He wants to do that. And if defenses can find a way to stop him and make this a one-dimensional team and force them to lean more on the run game, it will be very interesting to see, like, does Michael Penix have a changeup? Is he able to adapt? Or is he like kind of a one-trick pony? And if that's the case, this offense is not going to be a top 10 unit like it needs to be to justify all the investment that's been on that side. And then you turn on the defensive side and there's just too many holes to think that this is going to be like an average group. Like, you're bringing in Jeff Ulbrich, who was a good mind in New York the past couple of years with Robert Saleh, but clearly couldn't handle a locker room as the interim coach. And then you wonder, with just the lack of talent, are they going to be able to squeeze everything out of this group? I have concerns that this is a defense that can't stop the run. The Panthers could literally probably run the ball 30 to 40 times a game as long as their offensive line is healthy, and they would probably have a successful run at like almost every single time because the push up front would just be that good. And it's just when you start looking into that and then you start understanding how that plays into numbers, like it's going to be very hard for this Falcons defense to get into third down situations where it's a third and long, to where it even justifies having Jalen Walker and James Pierce on the field. Like, those guys are your speed edge rushers, guys that can get to the quarterback on third down. But if it's not third and long and it's a third and two, they're just going to be handing the ball off. Like, it's just, I don't understand the build. I just don't.
I think it speaks a lot to the desperation of the general manager, Terry Fontenot. When you survive two different coaching regimes, two different quarterback experiences, right? You got to remember they took Desmond Ridder a few years ago. They had Mariota before that. They signed Kirk Cousins to almost a mega deal, you could say, last offseason. And now he's the backup making $100 million. They could have saved, I think, $20 million if they cut him before the league new year. Didn't do that for some reason. So he's there, probably disgruntled. And you have the eighth overall pick, Michael Penix, on the team. There's just too many chances, I think, for Terry Fontenot to have stayed this long. I think it's finally caught up to him. I think you bring up a really good point about the run defense. This team already last year, this defense, I mean, was 28th in EPA per play. They were 30th in success rate. That means teams sustained drives on them like pretty heavily. And that was with Grady Jarrett. So now you have guys, a lot of day two picks from last year's draft, like Braylon Trice, Rook Ororo from Clemson, guys who didn't play a ton last year, they're going to have to play a lot. And the edge rushers that you added this year are going to have to play a lot as well. both of the edge rushers, I don't think, are super conducive to stopping the run. Pierce, I think, is a bit better, but on limited snaps in college, so we'll have to see. And then we've expressed our concerns about Jalen Walker, about his NFL size and his playing size and how you use him in the NFL. The Falcons seem to be wanting to use him as a traditional defensive end. And if I'm not mistaken, Jeff Obrick runs an even front. And when you have an even front with undersized rushers, edge rushers, that is, it's already going to be hard to stop the run. So I don't really understand what the point there is. And then on the back end, they're starting a lot of rookies as well. Xavier Watts and Billy Bowman, the two safeties they drafted, are both projected to start. Head coach Raheem Morris said that today in their presser. I don't see the path for this team getting better outside of basically every young player that's already on the team. We'll say like year five and under, improving tremendously, because that's how it has to be. They didn't bring in outside talent. I know we're Panthers fans and we like to gas up the Panthers, but the road for the Panthers improving is so much wider, not only because they're so far behind defensively, but just look at the number of people they brought in with the draft and with free agency. Even if you don't believe that those players are good starters or average starters, it's so much change to where the Panthers have that chance to improve. The Falcons don't have that. And when you stagnate season to season, it really means you regress, because every team in the league is improving. And that's where I'm thinking the Falcons aren't going to be the sneaky playoff team this year. I think they're going to be looking closer to where Carolina and New Orleans was last year.
And it's not to say that like within a couple more years that the defense couldn't be turned around, but it's just like you have holes on the interior defensive line, you have holes in the secondary. Like, yeah, you have a couple linebackers that you can hang your hats on. You went all in for these edge rushers, but if you find yourself in a position where you have another top 10, top 15 pick, oh wait, you don't have your first round pick for next year. Like, this is, and that's where it's like the last ditch effort. Like, that's how you really know. It's like you're trading next year's first because you're trying to have that last claim. Like, no, we know what we're doing. Like, no, you guys don't know what you're doing. You haven't been able to make the playoffs. What you've done at quarterback has not worked at any point in time. And obviously that's how your body of work is judged, but this isn't a good roster. It's just not a good roster, and there's no way around that. And I think the offensive line injuries are going to catch up. I know you and me were getting heated prior to recording this, but I genuinely think with the Falcons' offensive line injuries, some of the other offensive line injuries, like, I feel most confident going into week one with like the Saints group, just because like they know they're starting five. Like, they've known that for this whole offseason, and it's some of these key core players. You don't have these two Pro Bowl type guys and Caleb McGarry and Drew Dolman now with the Falcons rolling out week one. Penix had those guys last year. Like, that can be a difference maker when you look at how you're going to be able to win games this fall.
Yeah, and it's not an easy schedule, right? Because they were a second place team. Trying to pull up their schedule really quick, because I think they start the season. Yeah, they do start the season versus Tampa Bay. Then it's a Sunday night football game in Minnesota, which is, I guess, the two rookie or second year QBs. And then Carolina, then Washington, which will be a tough game, and then the bye. So if they can sneak one win there, maybe the Panthers win, you're looking at 1-3 in your bye week. And then after that, it's Buffalo, San Francisco, Miami's, I guess, a freer game. Then New England, Indy, Carolina, Jets, Seattle. Like, this isn't a favorable schedule. Like, we talked about with the Niners last week, Cal, or was it last week or on Tuesday, how they have a lot of injuries already, but their schedule's so weak that they can absorb it. That's just not the case with the Falcons. And so I struggle to see the path that the Falcons can get better than 8-9 last year. That was probably a bit of an overachievement. I mentioned that they beat the Buccaneers twice. I believe both of those were pretty fluky wins, if I'm not mistaken. I know the Thursday night one where, what was it, Kadarius Hodge caught like a screen pass and took a 60 yards for the touchdown. That's just not a legitimate win against a Tampa Bay Buccaneers team that's won the division four times in a row, going on five. And I think when we talk about the Buccaneers, this is a natural transition. We're going to do the Panthers last because we're Panthers fans. But the Buccaneers, I think, are the clear favorite to win the division again, right? I think there are more questions this year than there have been in years past. Stuff like Tristan Wirfs not starting the year. Stuff like the pass rush being a pretty major concern, at least for me. But the talent level of this team still should outshine a lot of those concerns. Also bring in a new offensive coordinator for the third time. We've seen where teams have been able to bring in good ones that the third time usually is the time when it falls through. But I believe Grizzard was on the roster last year, if I'm not mistaken, with Liam Cohen. He was just an internal hire, so that should help a bit. How are you feeling about the Buccaneers? Are there any reservations or any way that you think that the Bucs won't win the division this year?
Won't win the division. Obviously, your boy's going to be pulling for the hometown team, the Carolina Panthers, to somehow pull it off. But the Buccaneers, for the most part, they have the best roster top to bottom. They've gone toe-to-toe with some of these teams in the NFC that have either Super Bowl aspirations, have won the Super Bowl. I mean, look at what this Bucs defense has done to Jalen Hurts twice in the postseason. Obviously, he didn't have A.J. Brown in those games, but it completely just shut him down and made him look very, very fallible. So there's hope on that front that, okay, you have some things where you can make life miserable on your fellow teams and fellow quarterbacks. I love the Hassan Reddick addition. We'll see if he has anything in the tank. But for me, that's a guy that if he can take the pressure up a notch and allow you not to blitz as much as you have to, I think that's a huge boost. I like what they did in kind of the secondary and kind of remolding and tinkering that in the draft in the offseason. And then it's really just going to come back to Wirfs' health. I think that is going to be the biggest difference maker. I don't think people realize just how important an all-pro left tackle like him is until he's gone. And the biggest example of that is like Trent Williams or Laremy Tunsil or Teron Armstead down in Miami. Like when those guys have been on the field, you could tell an immediate difference when they're off the field. And that's what I'm worried about for the Buccaneers is you're losing Liam Cohen, so you have some brain drain. You're losing arguably the best player on your offense for the first month. And you're putting Baker Mayfield, a guy who led the NFL in interceptions, in a situation where if he's not as comfortable, he might be more mistake prone. So that is where I see them kind of falling off, is if this isn't as buttoned up or as well dressed because loss of talent and brain drain this past offseason.
And of course, they play the Panthers week 16 and 18, so we don't get to experience any of the Tristan Wirfs-less games, unfortunately. But one of the guys we didn't mention not starting the year is Chris Godwin, and he was an important piece for them last year. The reason we're not mentioning him is among the additions that the Buccaneers brought in was the first-round pick, Emeka Egbuka, the Ohio State receiver, who by all accounts is looking incredible in the preseason and training camp. He's going to start in place of Godwin. And he's somebody I actually tried to get in fantasy last night. Wasn't able to. A little disappointed, but he's probably the most marquee addition that this team has brought in. You could say Hassan Reddick, but Hassan Reddick hasn't had a full season of games in quite some time. And just frankly, I'm underwhelmed by that addition. But Egbuka is going to be the big sticking point to me. He on offense, and then the two corners they brought in the draft, Benjamin Morrison and Jacob Parrish on defense. I think those are going to be big additions because the defense in particular, the pass defense in the secondary, needed a lot of help. So I'm looking forward to seeing how that works. The linebacking core is also kind of a sticking point to me. I know Levante David is back for, this will be year 14, maybe year 13. I know Bucs fans will tell you he's the best NFC South linebacker ever. That's just isn't the truth, because Luke Kuechly existed, but he's been effective still. Servasti Adenis is the other linebacker. He's effective. But I think if you're looking to poke holes in this team, not being as strong as they have been in years past, it's going to be the linebacking core and some of the early offensive injuries.
The biggest hole with Todd Bowles' defense is the middle of the field. And if you have a quarterback that can throw over the middle of the field, that knows where the pressure is coming from, I think Todd Bowles is, I'm not saying like what he does is becoming archaic and teams are moving on, but like when you're seeing the next evolution of defenses, it's guys like Mike McDonald or Aaron Glenn, where they're giving the offense a look because they know they're going to get into a specific formation or a specific play or a certain personnel set. And that is going to give way to doing exactly what they wanted them to do, because they had this kind of decoy coverage on the back end or pressure, simulated pressure to make things appear like it wasn't. And that, I think, is what Todd Bowles needs to evolve in as a play caller, because you can't just keep sending 5+ guys to get pressure. I get that you are looking for volatility and finding those negative plays, whether it's fumbles or sacks or interceptions, but you have to, I think, play more within the scheme of your defense and not, and I know that's anti Todd Bowles, but play in a way that you aren't just giving up these chunk plays, because that's just as vital in terms of stopping your opponent as finding those explosives and negatives in your favor.
Kind of reminds me of the Rams defense, very poor against the run. And well, the Bucs don't worry about that because Vita Vea, but down to down, not very good, but explosive, right? A lot of sacks, yep. A lot of takeaways. That's how this defense shakes out to me. I think the difference between Bowles and some of the coordinators you mentioned is that overall, the Buccaneers defense doesn't have the horses that a lot of those teams do, right? Outside of Vita Vea and Antoine Winfield Jr., I wouldn't say that any of these guys are among the top of the league at their position. Levante David was like 5 or 8 years ago, but not anymore. So that's kind of how I view the defense. The offense is going to be the X factor for me. The new play caller, I think, is going to have to be – I don't think he can be Liam Cohen level. If he can be Dave Canales level, but with the better offensive line, I think that might be good enough for them. You got to remember, this was a top five offense in everything last year, and that's hard to replicate when you lose a left tackle for some time, you lose the play caller. But I think they have enough infrastructure in place to keep it at least top half of the league. And I think the talent can get them the rest of the way to winning the division. So I have no real concerns about them slipping. I hope they do. So that way the Panthers have a chance, but I think reality is going to set in and the Buccaneers are going to be the favorite for this division again.
It's hard to argue with that. I think they are definitely the favorites to win it, but the team that we will be pulling for all year long, hopefully all year long, with a chance to pull it off, because like you said, we play the Buccaneers, I think two out of the last 3 weeks. So there's chance to pull some upsets off down the stretch, but the Carolina Panthers, like you alluded to when you were talking about the Atlanta Falcons, at least for them, it's like you added a bunch of bodies. Like you go out, you get Turk Wharton, you get some other guys in the draft, and Prince Umanmielen and Nick Scorton, obviously Patrick Jones, but you also cut Jadeveon Clowney and you cut Shy Tuttle. So that's depth that should have, I think, been a part of there. And so that I'm a little skeptical on. The back end on the defense is probably my biggest concern. And then offense, I don't have as many questions. It's more just now with Ike Ekwonu's appendectomy, worried about his recovery time and making sure he's coming back 100%.
Well, we didn't mention the most recent movement with the Panthers. They traded Adam Thielen back to his hometown, Minnesota Vikings. Vikings fans will say that we got fleeced. That just wasn't the case. The reporting was that they initially offered a 7th round pick. And if you look at trade charts and stuff like that, it got worked up to, and like with all the picks being sent back and forth, worked up to an early 5th or maybe a late 4th or comp round pick 4th, when you consider that the Vikings ate all of Thielen's contract as well. But Bryce Young's favorite target over the past 2 years is out of the team. Really his only good target over the past 2 years. And in his place, the Panthers bring in number 8 overall pick, Tetteroa McMillan, who I think we both agree is a special specimen of wide receiver at his size, his ability to generate yards after the catch and be a bit more fluid than somebody who's normally 6'4", 6'5", is. He's going to be a big sticking point for this team. Obviously, my questions about this team are on the defensive side of the ball. I'm going to say it every single time. This was the worst defense ever. They were 32nd in EPA per play, 32nd in success rate. They allowed the most points per game and ever in a season. They were worst against the run. Against the run, they allowed more yards than the team on offense had the best rushing offense. So the Eagles had the best rushing offense. We allowed more yards per play. So the worst rushing offense turned into the Eagles when we played it. It was that bad. But you mentioned the Panthers bring in 5 new starters on defense just from free agency. They bring in depth via the draft. I'm not as broken up about the Shy Tuttle cutting or waving as you are, because we have like 6 or 7 legitimate players in that room now. But the Jadeveon Clowney one, I think, is major. You're going to rely on guys like DJ Wonnum, who he missed half of last season, but he was good when he played. Patrick Jones is a new addition from the Vikings as well. And then the 2 rookies. So you're going to rely on new faces there. But I think by sheer volume of NFL caliber players you brought in, along with Derek Brown playing, hopefully, more than half a game next year, the defense has to be just so much better. And I'm not saying it's going to go from 32nd to 16. I'm saying it's going to go from 32nd, which really is like 40th if you string it out on a normal distribution. It's going to go from there to like 28th, 27th. That's like the hope. And if that's the case, if you look at what the Panthers did down the stretch on offense, you're winning way more games. They were competitive in a lot of games, and the defense just fails them at the end. So if you can have offensive growth a little bit, I'm not saying Bryce Young's gonna have 5 touchdowns every single game, but if you can be more competent on offense and have the defense play complementary football, this is a team that I think you could hope to win 7 or 8 games and take that next step this year. Again, I just don't think they have the horses to be able to contend with Tampa Bay or it be in a wild card discussion for that matter. The NFC North is just too good for any like 10 plus win team to be in the wild card discussion. So I'm not sure that we are there yet, but I think a lot of the additions they brought in are a necessary step in that direction, much like the Robert Hunt and Damian Lewis additions were 2 off seasons ago.
They were huge for kind of bringing the offensive line back to life. Because that was the reason why we drafted Bryce Young. We moved up to get him as we felt confident in the offensive line. They got hurt. And then the reevaluation with Dave Canales is like, hey, we're going to bring in some nasty dudes that'll push people around. And so the goal this past offseason was to do that for the defensive line. And obviously they added a ton of guys, and we'll see who works and who doesn't. Think of the preseason early on, the Houston Texans game that I watched, just with the starters on, they were kind of getting pushed and moved. And I'm hoping that's not going to be an indication of what's to come, because we need those guys to step up and stop the run. Because like you said, teams were the Philadelphia Eagles when they stepped up against our defense. It was just that bad. They could run the ball at will. And when you do that, then it's not helping any of the guys on the back end. This is not a good linebacking room. And like you said, the jump that you're looking for is to go from like 32nd to like 25 to 27th. And you really just want a high variance defense where you can generate pressure, turnovers, make the quarterback's life uncomfortable, and give your offense a shot. And obviously, Evero's approach, different from Todd Bowles, where he wants to generate kind of those volatile plays. He wants to kind of sit back and have 7 guys playing coverage. But it's just like, if you give the quarterback all day and you're not able to get after him, then that's a mute point altogether. So it is going to be very interesting to see how this all comes together. I think if the defense turns out another poor performance and guys do not step up, Evero's got to go. Like, in my opinion, like, this is too much for too long. Like, I get he had a great run in Denver for that 1 year stint, but it has not been anything substantial for now 3 years. And I think that is going to be the one thing at the end of the year that we're going to have to reevaluate along with everything else as we look to hopefully build off a 7-8 win season. And the goal for this should be, you want your point differential to get as close to 0 as possible. Because your point differential last year was actually worse than it was Bryce Young's rookie year. And so that is what needs to take a step up, is that, hey, you're playing in these close games, you're winning a few of them, you're losing a few of them, but you are not getting the doors blown off you week in and week out. And that was too much the case last year, especially early on.
You mentioned early on the first game of the year was with a rookie head coach. We play a rookie head coach in the first game of the year this year. Hopefully it goes
50 on us the last time.
I'm saying hopefully it goes a little bit like that in our favor this time, because I think, I'm not trying to preview the game already, but Jacksonville's actually a very similar situation to the Panthers, in my opinion. Actually, the Panthers defense is somehow better talent wise, but we'll have to see about that. You're giving me a look. Do you know how bad their pass rush was last year, despite having Hines Allen and Trayvon Walker? They were the worst in the league by far in sacks and pass rush win rate and passing yards allowed, despite having both of those guys. They were worse than the Panthers' worst defense ever, which is perplexing to me. And they didn't get any better.
You can bring up pass defense, but those guys were filling in gaps and stopping the run, something that the Panthers' defensive line couldn't do. And yes, the 2 guys you just mentioned, Trayvon Walker and Joshua Hines Allen, I would take over any of the pass rushers currently on the Panthers' roster. So
I would too. But they also couldn't run the ball last year. So we'll talk about that next week when we preview the Panthers game. The whole point with the Panthers, and I would say the X factors, the sticking point, what have you, it's going to be the growth of Bryce Young. If he gets off to a rough start again, the season's just over. Last year, I was surprised that we salvaged it in the second half of the year. He looked like a much, much better player. He actually looked among a top half of the league quarterback in the second half of the year. I think the defense kind of dragged us down there. If we can get more performances where the defense don't drag us down, kind of like the Philly game, ironically, that was one of their better defensive performances. But if we can get more of those with a better offensive output, I think this team has the chance to win 7 or 8 games. And I think that's what the goal should be. I know it's year 3 of Bryce Young, but the sad reality of this team is we don't have the talent, and we were in cap hell from previous regimes, what have you. This isn't a team that could go out or should go out and trade for Micah Parsons, even though the Cowboys did say about 20 minutes ago that he's making them available. They're actually listening to offers now, and they want to resolve. So we'll see what happens. Jerry Jones is just a weirdo for trying to negotiate without having the agent involved. We'll see what happens there. I doubt Parsons gets moved, but if he does, I don't think the Panthers are in position to trade away 2 firsts and create the kind of space to acquire a guy like Parsons. I would love it just for the talent on the team, but I'm not sure we're there yet. We should just be competitive. That should be the goal this year, 7 or 8 wins. And I think getting into our division rankings, I think a good part of what the Panthers' goal should be for the season is to finish second. And so I'm going to go and say the Bucks are the clear first team. I think the Panthers' avenue of improvement is just so much greater. I think they will improve, and I think the Falcons will regress. And so I think the Panthers are going to be the 2 spot in the division, Atlanta 3. And I just think that kind of like how the Buccaneers are so far ahead in terms of talent, I think the Saints are just so far behind. So I'm going to go the Saints 4th. So Tampa, Carolina, Atlanta, and New Orleans is my order. What about you?
I think the league likes playing like cyclical games. I know everybody like wants to talk about like scripts and everything's set up in a way that, like where we talked about earlier, the Saints, Archie Manning, is he going to come out and get drafted by the New Orleans Saints, or Garrett Neusmeyer and LSU, is he going to get drafted and play with Pops? And like some of that stuff's cool and all, but I look at the Falcons and I think back to last year in the NFC South, because a lot of people, they saw the Panthers. They saw the Panthers come off a 2-win season. They saw that we still didn't have a lot of talent on the roster. And it's like, you guys are the joke of not only your division, but kind of the whole league. And we didn't surpass the Saints, but we finished with the same record and we were pretty much there. I think the Saints, even though they are going through some turmoil and stuff, they will find a way to just win a couple because teams underrate them so much. And that is how they're going to win more games than the Atlanta Falcons. So that is my perfect take this week. So I think the Atlanta Falcons finish last in the division and have for sure a top 10 pick, which Terry Fontenot promised that the team would not have for a very long time when they selected Michael Penix. And maybe potentially a top 5 pick. So I know this goes against some of the Saints picks where we said that they would be in the top 5. And I'm trying to remember if I had, I know you've had those takes, mm-hmm, and I think I said something about the Browns, but I don't know if I've officially said about the Saints. I just think because of what we're talking about with the Falcons, like, yes, they've added talent, quote unquote, on paper, but this defense isn't great. They probably can't stop the run any much better. And then you were banking on rookies increasing your pressure rate to get at least some volatility on that side. And that's a lot to ask for. So because of that, I have a little bit more faith in the Saints offensive structure because I feel like they can at least run behind their offensive line. Where I'm a little bit more concerned with the Falcons is, are they going to be able to lean on Bijan as much as they have been? I don't know. I think that's the take I'm leaning towards.
So you're saying the Falcons give their top 10 pick, top 5 pick to the LA Rams.
And this was the cruel thing is I'm glad you could finish that statement. I got off on a whole tangent of like comparing the two. That means the Rams end up with that top 10 pick, which means they get their quarterback of the future without having to suck this year. And so maybe they pull off a wild card berth with some combination of Matthew Stafford, Jimmy G, Stetson Bennett quarterback. But I think they're going to get their franchise guy next year. And it's going to be because of the Falcons pick, very much like how the Seahawks with what was the trade for Russell Wilson with the Broncos? They had a top 10 pick after that. You look the Rams when they traded their one pick to go get Stafford, the Lions ended up with a top 10 pick. Obviously, they didn't draft quarterbacks with those guys, but they drafted blue chip players that are instrumental in both of those teams trying to make playoff runs this year.
Those ended up being the Devin Witherspoon, Jahmyr Gibbs, both of whom, I'm pretty sure Gibbs was not pro this past year. Or if he wasn't, he should have been, I think, second team. We can agree Gibbs is top two or three running back in the league. Devon Witherspoon, one of the better corners. They play him a lot at nickel. He might be the best nickel corner in the National Football League. I'm so glad that you went with this pick, because when we have our notes here, I like to type my pick out and then I mark it with black highlighters so Steve can't see what it is. Now that I'm going to uncover it, I think the Falcons win less than seven games. We can go even lower than that now that we've been talking about this. But Raheem Morris,
I took their under at 7.5 last year, and it was all that, like the Eagles win they had and some of the other ones were so fluky. And it was just like they should have lost less than that last year.
And with the regression, Raheem Morris and Terry Fontenot get the axe. As unfortunate as it would be for Raheem Morris to have to deal with Kirk Cousins, and then Kirk Cousins being bad, and Michael Penix, and then if Penix doesn't improve, that would be just a rough way to look at it, because you have to imagine Terry Fontenot was really big in both of those deals, the Cousins and the Penix deal. You saw him explaining the Michael Penix pick to Arthur Blank on draft night, the clip where he's like, no, this is the plan, trust me. And if that backfires, it's going to be rough. The Rams, you talked about the Rams. When we did our NFC West, I think I had the Rams coming in last or second to last. And if that happens, they might have two top 10 picks. It can really turn that franchise around. Kind of reminds me of how the Niners have done it in the Shanahan years. They'll have an injured slash down year, get a blue chipper, instantly NFC championship team again, right? I think McVay's that good of a coach, and they could turn some stuff around like that. So if you're a Rams fan, I think you would love for the Falcons to be really bad this year. And not like a Falcons hater aside, I think there's a real chance that happens.
It's just for me, as much as you want to make jokes about Spencer Rattler and Tyler Shuck, we didn't see Spencer Rattler last year, at least when he came on the field with like a Chris Olave or Rashid Shaheed, like capable NFL wide receivers. He was throwing the practice squad guys and tight ends. And obviously, I'm not saying they're like quality like quarterbacks in the NFL, but Michael Penix, again, we haven't seen him play a defense. We saw him play like nobodies. And so it's like, does that change? And now teams have film on you. Like, that is where I'm very concerned that the floor on this could fall out because of some of those injuries. His blind side, he's got an injury history. So like, what if Michael Penix gets hurt and Kirk Cousins goes in there? He has no arm strength. He can't get the ball anywhere. And it's like, you're back at square one. Like the whole point of like getting those two in a room together is that you had a plan for quarterback moving forward. And it looks like that could be what blows up in their face and could be their very undoing.
The cruel irony of Kirk Cousins leaving Minnesota because he knew they were going to draft a rookie, only for the Falcons to draft a rookie even earlier. And now it's all going to crash down. At least that's how we predict it to happen. That's going to be it for our division previews, offseason division previews. We're officially in game week one next week. So on Tuesday, we'll do a brief show about predictions, like awards, how we see the playoff seeds stacking up, that kind of thing. Then on Thursday, it's game day. So we'll probably preview that game, preview obviously the Panthers game and some of the other ones we have our eyes on in week one. There's a lot of good week one matchups that we'll have to talk about. But until next week, and until we have college football this weekend, but until NFL football starts next week, keep pounding.